Hey guys, before we get into the podcast, just a quick reminder, if you guys haven't checked out the Intensive Care Academy yet, there is a lot of good stuff there. Video lessons on all kinds of content, including a full-fledged orientation program for new ICU APPs, and we're starting to roll out a lot of more specialized material. We've been working through MICU topics recently, ranging from COPD exacerbations to DKA to CHF. There's a whole POCUS course that's going to be dropped soon. We're holding monthly live sessions for Q&As, two private podcast feeds for all members, and a whole bunch more. ICU101.com. Check it out. I'm Brandon Odo.
And I'm Brian Bowling.
And this is Critical Care Scenarios, the podcast where we use clinical cases, narrative storytelling, and expert guests to unpack how critical care is practiced in the real world.
Hello, everyone. Welcome back to the podcast. Brian Bowling with you. And with me, as always, is Brandon Odo.
Yo.
We wanted to take a minute and talk about something that we think is a pretty common question that we get asked a lot, both through the podcast, but also through our respective roles as critical care APPs. And that's, hey, I'm a brand new APP. I just graduated. I'm going to get into critical care. What do I do? How do I start this? How do I transition into this role from either being a nurse before or an EMT or whatever you were in your previous life? To a student and now to an actual, I'm an APP. And so we thought, yeah, well, we can talk about that, but you know, it's been a while since Brandon and I did this. And so we thought we'd get somebody who's a little bit closer to home about it. And so we're joined today by Noelia Bischoff. Noelia is a former student of mine at Georgetown. She was an ICU nurse for 12 years, most of it at Duke. And she graduated from Georgetown, like I said, in May of 2023. And she's been an NP in the medical ICU at Johns Hopkins in Baltimore since March of 2024. And so she's going to join us now. We're just going to chit-chat a little bit about what that's like, that transition, and lessons learned and tips and tricks and things like that. So welcome to the podcast.
Thank you. Really excited to speak with you guys today.
Yeah, Noelia, like Brian said, I think this is not an uncommon situation. And it's like, I think, particularly of interest to nurses who are, you know, going on to become NPs, because that particular transition, I think, can be interesting and maybe challenging for people. It's like it's almost like it might be simpler for coming from a completely different role. But because there is this kind of overlap and similarity between like bedside nursing and advanced practice role, I think a lot of people have, maybe struggle with it, or at least have to kind of figure out what that looks like. Just give us a little background here. What was your nursing experience like before this? And then your process of like deciding where you're going to work and kind of just that the administrative part of that.
Yeah. So, as a nurse, like you said, I was a bedside nurse for those 12 years. And throughout that time, you know, I would teach new nurses. I worked with on some projects that would help me, that would collaborate with pharmacists and the medical team with rolling out new protocols and things like that. Some of which were, you know, how are we going to transition to like intubating the patients on our unit? So that was a big one. And so as with teaching like ECMO to our nurses and as we developed our program. So I would collaborate, I would say, with the doctors, the pharmacists, and other people administrative on the unit. But most of my experience was, you know, within the nursing realm and teaching nursing to the new nurses on our unit. And then for the transition to where I am now, my transition kind of was a long transition, because it was about a year from after I graduated to when I started working my first NP position. Where I was living in North Carolina, there was just not a lot of critical care, and I knew I wanted to stay there. So I just waited and waited, gave myself a timeline, and decided that once I hit that 6 months If I didn't find anything, I would start, you know, branching out further. And that's kind of how I started looking further out of state. Then I found the position here where I am now. And it was medical ICU, which is what I've done for the 11 of the 12 years that I was a nurse. So I felt very comfortable with that patient population. And that's kind of how I chose, you know, uprooting everything and coming out of state to a totally new place.
So you were just open to going anywhere?
Yeah. My husband and I talked and we decided, let's just, the world's our oyster. We're going to look nationwide. Like, I had interviews in Washington, Ohio, and then in Maryland were the three big ones that were kind of out of state.
So what was their process like of orienting and onboarding you when you got hired?
So here, I think it's a little different from what the onboarding was like every place. Like when I asked about what their process, everyone's a little bit different. I think it depends on kind of the size, the amount of turnover they have. This group here in the medical ICU at Hopkins, the newest nurse practitioner had been there already 6 years, but she was a nurse there for an additional 5 years. So she wasn't so much as a new grad. She already knew the system, knew the people and all those things. So I was really the first new grad, new to the facility, nurse practitioner in, I think it was about 10 years. So other places who've had, it seems like a lot more training needed because they have a lot of new hires coming in. They had a bit more formalized process, but since they hadn't had to do that here, it was a bit more laid back and a lot more just custom to what I was interested in, what my needs were, which I think worked really well since being an ICU nurse for so long. You know, there are some things I was very comfortable with ICU-wise, but then you know, other processes thing were not what, I'm sorry, were things that were new to me. And that's what I needed more help with. So it was very customized. It was about 3 months, 3 months that were official, one-to-one with another nurse practitioner. And I, had different shifts with different people. And at the end of the 3 months, it was a kind of soft transition off of orientation, where I was officially off, but I still had a nurse practitioner kind of with me. We kind of doubled up the assignments. We usually is only one nurse practitioner for one side of the unit. And so I still had another nurse practitioner with me, if that makes any sense, to just make it a bit more smooth transition off of the orientation.
Brian, what's been your experience with the duration of these kind of things? I feel like I've seen, I mean, the handful of places I've been, like orientations have ranged from, I want to say around 3 months is usually on the short side, but I've seen up to like a year or more, depending on how much they need staff for like new hires. I mean, if you're coming in with experience, then I think it can kind of be, I don't know, usually they do a few weeks. You got to learn like what phone numbers to call and stuff, but.
Right. Yeah. I think, I'm trying to think, I did 6 months when I was brand new. And I think that's still what we do pretty much for new people. Yeah, like you said, if we hire people with experience, it's different. But 6 months in ours is very structured, but a lot of places are not. You know, I've talked to former students who have said their orientation basically consisted of, you know, here's how to print the list. Here's your pager. You know, go.
Yeah, and that's what everyone is equipped to, just stick you on service and have you learn by doing. Not everywhere, and I would say most places are not really equipped to like have a real curriculum for you. Some places do. I mean, obviously that's sort of ideal. You can have kind of, you know, objectives and competencies, things they want to make sure you see and learn how to do. In some places it looks like a mini kind of fellowship program. I mean, they do some off-service training, things like that, maybe procedural stuff. That's definitely not the norm. I mean, that's why, not to segue into a plug, that's why we did the our work with the Intensive Care Academy, which you guys may have heard us plugging recently, but just to have some of kind of didactic content for places like that. But it definitely, a lot of it is also just a matter of how much do they want to slash care to train you, because
yeah,
you can. There's obviously a minimum. You can't throw people out there independently who are like don't have no idea what to do. But the minimum is, I want to say like a low bar, it's but
pretty minimum.
If what they want you to do is just like round and
well, I was going to say, I think a lot of it depends on what you value from your APPs and what you think the role of the APP is, right? Because I've known people who have been in a position where they're really upfront and say this directly, but usually it's sort of just hinted at that your role as an APP is, to be in the unit and deal with emergencies at times when we want to be at home asleep, right? You know, I mean, I had a friend who was basically hired for that. She was hired to cover nights, and they really wanted somebody right now. So when can you start? You can start on Monday. Great. Monday, you're on your own, right? Because we do not want to have to spend any more time in the ICU at night.
And it's like, call someone.
Yeah, yeah. Something you can happens, call. Basically. You can call one of us for at home if you need somebody. But basically, you're there to put out fires. So, what really training do you need, right? You should really do that.
I had someone in a leadership role. They were trying to staff the surgical like PA positions, and they didn't have people who were trained in some of the different specialties. So they were going to have them cross cover, and they're like, I don't really care if this CT surgery person doesn't know anything about urology. What are they going to do? They're going to see the patient, write an HMP, call the surgeon.
Right.
I'm like, okay, if that is what you're looking for, then yes. If you're looking for people to, like in our case, practice critical care medicine, it might take a little longer.
Right.
No, Larry, what would you say is your role is like there? What's kind of the for the trained, experienced people, what kind of level of autonomy do they enjoy, and what's their role in the system?
Yeah, the role here, I think, is really unique in that it's a teaching hospital. So on our side of the unit with our patients, so it's two sides, and we have 12 patients on each side. And so each 12 patients kind of gets a group. You have an APP, you have an attending, a resident, and an intern. And it's really big team dynamic. The APP will take like first call or lead on 3 to 4 patients. And it is expected that the APP is there as a resource and helping the residents with their patients. So, you know, you'll round with your attendings in the mornings. You will have the plan for the day. And then depending on your attendings, I guess like their personality and how they do things, they may be more hands-on or hands-off. But then it would be you with two residents overseeing the 12 patients. I think the fact that the APP is expected to be the resource for the residents, that was a very new concept for me in my experience. The way they did it on my old unit, they were separate. There was no overlap. The APPs had their patients, the residents had theirs. And so I guess the APP kind of functions as like I would have assumed like a fellow would, overseeing. And so they're there as the resource for them. We're also expected to be the like procedural experts. So with lines, line placements or whatnot, we're there to help them and help them kind of get their credentialing. So it was very important during my orientation to get all my procedures, still working on them, but so that once I am credentialed for that, I'm going to be there teaching and helping them. It was expected that I would kind of hit the ground running, get up to speed, and now I'm there additionally as a resource for them since, you know, they have a lot of that medicine background, but I'm the one with the critical care and the ICU experience.
Yeah, you know, usually, you know, most ICUs fall in one of these camps. Either it's kind of independent services with ABPs or you're mixed in with house staff like residents, in which case usually it's like you said, you take some of your own patients and you're also as kind of a presence, you're there as a kind of a resource person. And, you know, that can be kind of treated delicately. A lot of places try to avoid saying you're there to supervise anyone else because they're not sure like administratively if you're supposed to be supervising physicians. But depending on your experience, you may have far more experience during critical care than a lot of them. So because you said there's a fellow, and of course there's an attending. Are the interns and residents like let's say if they're trying to make a decision and you gave them advice, would they feel uncomfortable doing that? Or would they feel like they had to go to the fellow or the attending? Or because again, you're not, it would be hard to say that you're there to tell them what to do, which of course you're not, but you are there.
So yeah, typically if there's any kind of questions, they would come to us and we'll, you know, talk about it. If there's anything that I'm not sure about, then, you know, we'd go to the attending, or if they're not there, then the fellow on the other side.
So what, I mean, how, what was your perception of this process of, you know, switching roles? Because you, I mean, you worked in critical care doing a very different role, mm-hmm. and now you're seeing maybe some of the same sorts of patients with the same sorts of problems, but doing something different. What was that like for you?
I think I was surprised. You know, I think in school, they can only do so much to prepare you for making these kinds of decisions. The scenarios they give you to like practice and to think through overall are very clean cut scenarios. You know, there's no way for them to write about a patient who's been in the hospital for a month, going back and forth, you know, from the ICU to the floor with all these different comorbidities and things that you need to take into consideration when you see your patient and when you're making a plan. So I don't think I realized kind of the difference in those real life patients with all these complexities versus what they kind of can prepare you with in school. I knew there was a difference, but until you're in there, it makes a big difference. So that was another difficult.
You're saying thing. As a bedside nurse, the decision making was sometimes more clear cut, whereas now is maybe some more gray areas of, you know, what do you do in a certain situation?
Yeah. Yeah. Like, you know, as a bedside nurse, you know, you see your patient and, you know, you want some Tylenol. And so you ask for it. And then, you know, it takes forever before you hear back. And, you know, you kind of would laugh at that. But when you're in that, making that decision, sometimes you're like, oh, can I give them Tylenol? How much? I thought their LFTs were a little high, you know, when they came in. And you really kind of learn to appreciate the amount of thought that actually has to go into it. And it's not as straightforward as you would think. So that was, I didn't think I'd be that person to be hesitant to give Tylenol, but apparently I was, or and I am. another big thing for me personally that my brain had to get used to is following multiple patients. You know, as a ICU nurse, you have one, maybe two. Some places you'll take three. But for me, it was one or two. And by the last several years of being a bedside nurse, I usually only had one. And so I would know all of these fine details about one patient, their history, all the several days leading up to it in fine detail. But then when you're transitioning to a provider, I first, you know, I started out with one patient, then two, then three, and now I'm able to kind of have my three core patients, and I'm still overseeing and, or the wrong word, not oversee, but I'm still following the remaining for the total of 12. And that is a big stretch for your brain, and learning that, you know, you can't, that the nurse, the bedside nurses are there to follow those little things. And you're there looking at big picture for the patients. And so having to keep straight so many patients in my brain is still a work in progress. And I can definitely see just, you know, how I'm able to do that now compared to just a few months ago. So that was a very big stretch for your brain and learning how to just keep up with all the information that you're supposed to be like monitoring throughout the day.
Yeah, I can imagine, because there is in most places a higher ratio like that. I mean, depending on how you're organized, you may have half a dozen patients. I mean, you could have a dozen, you could have 20 patients depending, you know, maybe you're on days or, you know, some surgical units or just depending on, and it, yeah, you can't, like, you know, so you take sign out on patients. Like I just did a stretch of night shifts and, you know, we had, I don't know, dozen patients, something in the unit, which is not a busy for us, but you know, some people are like writing down all this details about them. I'm very sparse. Like I don't try to keep track. Like which pressors somebody's on. Are they even on pressors? Like, I may or may not, but I know that I can easily find out and look it up, and that's kind of what matters to me. But obviously, if you're taking care of one patient as the nurse, you need to know those things. And of course, you can know them because there's not as much information. But you know, you need it more on hand because you're directly managing these things. If something comes up with a patient who I'm like barely aware of, you know, I can check on that stuff if I need. So I don't think it's that a lot of like learning how to keep track of more info. It's just learning that you don't have to.
Yeah, I was gonna say we'll sometimes hear the nurses giving a report in the morning. Because they'll do it right outside of our workroom. And I remember like getting a report as a nurse and thinking, you know, there's all this detail, right, that they're talking about that I don't care about. And, you know, it's funny that it will take probably close to the same amount of time for the day shift and night shift nurse to hand off two ICU patients as it does for the night shift NP in our group to hand off the entire service to us, right? Just because of all that.
Yeah, because they're making it like immediately available for them. Whereas for us, it's like the stuff that I know in the sense that I know where to look it up.
Yeah.
I don't know, you know, this patient's propofol dose, but I know I can get it and that's good enough for that kind of thing. You know?
Mm-hmm. Noelia, so obviously you only have the experience of becoming an NP in a unit that you did not previously work in as a nurse. But I'm always interested in the experience of people who do that versus, you know, I was a nurse yesterday and I'm an NP today in the same environment. Do you think it was more helpful to you to go someplace new or less? Or what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah. So I've thought about this a lot. And I've come up with my own like little theory about this on my drives to and from work. And I think we have, like, when you're transitioning to a new role, you have like a set amount of bandwidth and brain power that you can use. And I had to use a lot of this bandwidth just to learn where to park, learn how to get up to the unit. I had to memorize the codes for the bathroom and for the supply room. And, you know, after you're doing all these day-to-day things, you're having to actively think about them. And so then you have a lot less bandwidth to think about this transition and your new skill and your patience and do this, the new learning that you're doing in your new role. So I think going to a new place, for me personally, it made things more difficult. I'm still so like mentally exhausted. You're learning new names. You're learning just where the break room is, the nurses' names, your respiratory therapists, and then just how different places do things. I mean, the two places where I did work and where I work now, they're big, large academic institutions. So there's some things that are very similar, but there is such differences in how things are done, the different medications that happen to be on formulary, you know, the different medications you use, for example, like for sedation. Here, they use very high doses of fentanyl, stuff that I was really shocked. You know, I was used to a dose of sedation on a patient, 50 to 75. And once we got there, we're like, oh, that's really high. We're going to transition to Dilaudid or whatever it is. And here, no one blinks an eye if they're on 150, 200 an hour. Just little things like that. Ventilator modes, what they're used to using on their patients. I came from a very high pressure support, pressure control facility, and here it's all volume. So that was another transition in thinking and getting used to. So not only is it like the day-to-day things that are different, the people who you contact, how you call consults, the names of the services, you know, the general surgery is known as Halsted. Learning all those little things just in day-to-day conversation and what you do throughout the day, really threw me for a loop, a lot more than kind of I anticipated.
It's like new role and new job, basically.
Yes. Yeah, new house, new everything.
I feel like the challenge a lot of people have with that, like staying in the same place, is the change in their relationship with the staff. Like the nurses that you used to work with, now you're, I'm not saying you're telling them what to do, but I mean, you're literally, you know, clicking on things that are called orders. So, you know, you are in a way. Yeah. And some people either they have trouble with that, or maybe their colleagues have trouble with, again, now they're being told what to do. Do you think that might have been difficult for you if you had stayed in the same institution?
I think it has to, it's very different with every person. I think it has to deal with your personality and like the kind of relationship you have with the nursing staff. Maybe how long you've been there and things like that. I didn't really see it. I didn't anticipate that it would be an issue. But I think the same transition that you would have as going from like same level colleague now to a provider in that same place would be the same learning curve or transition that it would be to, I'm coming into a new place with new nurses who don't know me, and I'm doing things a little bit different than what they're used to because of the facility I'm coming from. And so they're kind of not wary, but they're like, all right, who is she? Does she know what she's talking about? Mm. Do we trust her? Can we go to her? And I've definitely seen a difference in like the first 2 months I was there. Even if I was, you know, first call, they would still go to someone else because they're like, I don't know her. And I can see a difference now, you know, I coming off shift, and yesterday I was getting a lot of people coming to talk to me. This is an update. I need you in the room, things like that. And I can tell that they're starting to get to know me and feel comfortable coming to me. So I think just that it would be a different transition, but that transition from same level, I guess, peer to being the provider is going to be kind of there. Each way is a transition, if that makes sense.
Yeah, that's a good point. One of the things that I see a lot in new providers and in students particularly is this concept of role confusion. You know, especially from people who are nurses before, or nurse, like I said, they're students or nurses. I don't know that I've ever precepted a student who is a nurse in the unit that we're working in. Maybe I have, but definitely lots have been in other ICUs within the same hospital. And I think that there is a certain level of comfort in the, I know how to be an ICU nurse. And so when things sort of start to get difficult, it's very easy to sort of slip into that role. And I think that's something that I try to work hard with students to get out of that. What do you think that is more prevalent? When you're out of school and you're a practicing NP, is that something that you've had to struggle with a little bit in that terms of, you know, I really know how to do this job really well, so maybe I'll just do that for a few minutes, right? Like to feel a little bit better. Because I would think that might be something that is less common in a situation like yours where you're in a totally different place. Like, I don't know how to be a Hopkins nurse, right? I've never done that. So maybe that helps a little. I don't know. Well, what are your thoughts about this idea of role confusion or transitioning from being a nurse to being an NP and having to fight that instinct to just kind of go back to the basics?
Right, because on one level, it would seem like it would help that you knew how to do all the nursing things. But for some people, you have to convince them not to be like changing wound dressings or something when they should be like running a resuscitation. And that wouldn't come up for someone who didn't know how to do that.
Yeah. Codes is where I see it a lot, right? Is because, you know, oh, I know how to run a pump. I'll titrate drips. Yeah. Nope, you're the code leader.
Yeah, I can see that being really easy to do. And I think it would be easier to do in a unit that you worked, because I think the people there have seen you in that role, see you do it. And so they know that you can do it. And so I think they would then be comfortable you touching the pumps, doing this and that. They know that you know where all the supplies are to go get something to prime a line or whatnot. Here, I felt like I definitely had that urge in these situations I can see the blood pressure going down. I'm just like trying to hold myself from going over to the pump because we have the same pump. So that would be very easy. but I've never been a nurse here. So then I feel like I'm overstepping if I were to do that. I did touch a pump once, and I learned very quickly. She was like, oh, I already did that. I was like, oh, sorry. Sorry. I will not do that again. That's my comfort zone, but I quickly learned that one. But yeah, because like in those high pressure situations, you know, most of the time you go into your autopilot and, you know, what you've learned, your muscle memory. And so I don't have muscle memory as a provider yet. It's still very hardcore ingrained in me as a bedside nurse. So I can feel it slowly kind of going away, but it's still there. In those high pressure situations, I literally put my hands by my back or my pockets, and I go to the head of the bed and I stand and I'm like, okay, I'm going to facilitate and lead. But yeah, those reflexes to do the things as a bedside nurse are still very, very strong.
Like, you got to tape your hands behind your back. I also wonder, maybe it depends to some extent on your setting and how well-resourced it is, because, you know, Hopkins is a big academic place with a lot of infrastructure and hopefully a lot of staff. So you generally probably shouldn't have to do things that are essentially somebody else's job. You know, but if you're somewhere small, a community center or something, that might come up more just because there is not as many places for people to turn to. And whether that comes up to just like there's not enough hands to do something, or, you know, not enough kind of expert, like resource people, where, like, you know, the nurse who doesn't know how to do something can like turn to the more senior nurse, or, you know, there's some kind of supervisor in their system, something like that, you know. But if you're in like the little hospital, maybe no one knows, and therefore your ability to know how to troubleshoot that may be key. Whereas hopefully somewhere like this, that, yes, maybe you have that ability, but you don't have to because they have somewhere else to go.
Right.
Was there anything you would have done differently in this process now that you're kind of fresh on the other side of that transition?
The biggest thing is just mentally preparing. And, you know, there is no cookie cutter way to do that. Because, you know, the transition from someone who has been a bedside nurse for 4 years is different from someone like me who had 12 years. And I think that's what makes, you know, being an APP, it's such a unique role, because there is so much variety in the roads that lead to become an APP. You know, when I first graduated, I was looking for that resource for that. How do I transition? What is it going to look like? What do I expect? And it's not out there. And I think it's just because everyone's experience leading up to this role, it's so variable, which is a great thing, right? You know, we have PAs, we have APP or PAs and NPs, and each one has different things that they're better at, have more experience in. And so like as a group, having that variety, I think just makes us better providers, being able to lean on each other for the different things that that people know that they're experienced in. I think mentally preparing for those ups and downs, I don't know how I would be able to prepare, but it would have made it better. Know that the imposter syndrome is so real. The first couple months, I don't know of anyone else's, you know, experience, but the first 2 months, I think for me, were the hardest. Really going in there feeling like I knew nothing. And that was really hard to come to grips with, because being at the bedside for 12 years, I was, you know, Patricia Benner's novice to expert. I was an expert. By the end of the day, I was not mentally fatigued because everything was so second nature to me. But now I, you know, instead of novice to expert, you know, it's expert to novice. And it is humbling and it is tiring mentally. And I think just understanding that, I think the mental part of it, like the ups and downs, the imposter syndrome, like I said, the learning curve, and it's going to get better, would have just been helpful, like getting mentally prepared for that. And you know, I'm still doing the learning curve with that. But I think the first 2 months, at that third month, things started feeling better. Things started to click a little bit more. And I started seeing those little glimmers of, oh, I didn't get tripped up on the patient who had, a change in their vital signs. I recognized it. I acted. I did the appropriate workup. And I did it. And you start kind of seeing that light at the end of the tunnel, that you're starting to get a hold of things. And the transition is happening. And you're supposed to be there. You're not an imposter. You're just learning.
I feel like that's probably also around the point where all those little things you mentioned, like the bathroom codes and stuff like that, you have figured that stuff out. So now you've kind of freed up that mental bandwidth to make the medical decisions, which you always had the ability to do, but you're like, your CPU was too overclocked with all the other stuff to, yeah. Now you can like realize your full, it's like, what are the ads that you see on the internet? Like, clear out the 20 pounds of clogged stool in your bowel. Now you're a better person or something like that. It's like you always had that ability. Yeah. You've unburdened yourself.
Yeah. I kind of compared it to, for the women who are in here, like the pregnancy brain. It felt like pregnancy brain. I was so slow. I'm still getting out of it, but slow at processing. There was this fog. I'm just like, people had to say things over and over just for me to understand. You feel a little forgetful. It felt for me postpartum like pregnancy brain, but at work, which was very unfortunate.
You're like creating the pathways in your head that you didn't have. It's, you know, it's like if you're trying to organize a room and every time you pick something up, you don't know where to put it. There's not a place for it. It just takes forever. But if you have spots for everything, then you're like, okay, this goes over here and this goes over here. But, you know, you only create those by creating them the first time you have to make them. So new role, new job, it's figuring out, you know, you get some new information. It's probably the first time that's happened to you. But next time it won't be. So you kind of start to have some places to put it.
Yeah, it had been about 12 years since I had to have such a steep learning curve. So I think it's good. I think that it adds, you know, it builds character. What doesn't kill you makes you stronger, you know. It was good to go back to that.
Yeah, well, a lot of people will never do that again after they've done a job for 12 years, so. What else do you want to leave us with? Any advice for people who are going into this process?
I think my biggest thing is learning about when picking a new job is learning about the group that you're going to be working with and kind of what the culture is, what kind of support you have. I think it really is the biggest thing. The group that I'm working with, they are wonderful. I can ask questions. They want to teach. They want me to do well. Because, you know, I'm going to come up, you know, alongside them. So I think the culture and the support that you're going to get from your new team, I think, is going to make all the difference.
All right. Well, we'll let you go. Thanks for the insight into this process. Like we said, this comes up not infrequently, because I think we have a lot of people on both sides of this transition. So hopefully this has kind of been some good look there. Of course, it's going to be different for everyone. But like you said, I think if you find a place that you trust to kind of be your partner in that process, I feel like that's probably the most important thing. We'd love to hear anyone else's experience if you want to share. And we'll leave it at that. Remember, if you guys haven't seen it, check out the Intensive Care Academy over at icu101.com. We've got lots more resources on exactly this sort of thing. And we'll talk to you next time.